Good afternoon. I'm going to call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:03 on Wednesday, February 4th. Present today with us are Representative Foster, Representative Klayman, Vice Chair Keller, and myself, Chairman Ledoux, and so we've got a quorum. Please, everybody, turn off your cell phone devices, tablets, or whatever you have which might make any noise. We have one bill before us today, and that is HB 4, an act relating to automated external defibrillators. That is a mouthful. Sponsored by Representative Wilson. And Representative Wilson is here with us today. And Representative Wilson, would you please put yourself on the record and brief the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity. For the record, my name is Representative Tammy Wilson. I represent North Pole, District 3. And on behalf of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, I am pleased to introduce HB 4. The purpose of this bill is to reduce impediments in state law to allow for more public access to AEDs. Sudden cardiac arrest is a leading cause of death in the United States, resulting in approximately 350,000 deaths per year. For each minute sudden cardiac arrest is untreated by defibrillation, survival chances decrease 7% per minute. We're new at this. In the first 3 minutes, and 10% per minute after the first 3 minutes. Automated external defibrillators are automated medical devices that can be safely used by an untrained bystander to restore a normal cardiac rhythm in someone who is in sudden cardiac arrest. When it is turned on, and we brought one today so that the committee would be able to actually see one, the device provides step-by-step verbal and written instructions. These devices have an impressive success rate. And we'd like to show the committee what one would do if you were to open it up in the hallway, because we also have them in the hallways here at the state capitol.
Stay calm. Follow these voice instructions. Make sure 911 is called now. Begin by exposing patient's bare chest and torso. Remove or cut clothing if needed. When patient's chest and torso are exposed, remove square foil package from lid of AED. Tear open foil package across dotted line and remove pads. Next, separate one of the white pads completely from blue plastic liner. Begin peeling from the tab corner. Firmly place the pad without the liner on the patient exactly as illustrated. This pad can be placed on either of the two locations shown. Next, peel the blue plastic liner off of the second white pad. Firmly place the second pad on the opposite location, exactly as illustrated. Do not touch patient. Analyzing heart rhythm. Please wait. Do not touch patient. Analyzing heart rhythm. Please wait. Preparing shock. Move away from the patient. Shock will be delivered in 3, 2, 1. Shock delivered. It is now safe to touch the patient.
And this is exactly how they will speak to you. And it's not just that. They now have ones that will even do CPR and walk
do
you on through
touch
CPR.
Patient. Analyze.
There we go. And sometimes it repeats itself. So why are we here? And what it is that the use of AEDs are currently covered by Alaska's Good Samaritan Law, which is designed to encourage would-be rescuers to take action without fear of litigation. However, Alaska's Good Samaritan attaches conditions to building owners and institutions that provide AEDs. These conditions include requirements to provide training, maintenance, a means of notifying 911, and registering the device with emergency medical services. Removing certain conditions and requirements will increase the number of AEDs in our community. And with that, Madam Chair, as we look at how easy these are used, I want to show you just for a moment where this is going in the future.
And before you do that, I'd like to let the record note that Representative Grunberg and Representative Lynn have joined us.
So, Madam Chair, as you see, they are becoming easier and easier to be able to utilize, and I don't know whether you saw in that last one, someone could see the patient as it was set there, you know, a medical professional. And part of that is to show that in bigger cities even, it may take longer for an ambulance to arrive. So this is actually being tested in other countries soon to arrive here. And with that, Madam Chair, I would appreciate the indulgence that if we could bring the University Fire Chief up to give his words and then be able to answer any kind of technical questions that the committee may have.
Certainly. Good afternoon. And if you could just identify yourself for the record and give us your affiliation.
Very good. Thank you. For the record, my name is Doug Schrage. S-C-H-R-A-G-E. I am the fire chief at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and I am representing the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. The Alaska Fire Chiefs Association and I are, first of all, we appreciate the opportunity for you to hear this bill and for my opportunity to testify in support of it. And we will urge your support for it as well. In my line of work, we rely on a speedy response to fires and medical emergencies. In order to save lives, we also rely on the intervention of ordinary bystanders to fill in the gaps before we are able to get on scene. These are citizens that are willing to step up and act to save another person's life. This is why we provide fire extinguishers and now automatic external defibrillators, or AEDs, in public places. However, the maximum benefits are derived only if they are immediately available to a patient in need. Evidence shows that untrained laypersons can safely and effectively apply and use an AED, as you saw, without risk of accidental shock to the rescuer or to the patient. I want to be clear that this is not a bill about discontinuing CPR and AED training and maintenance programs. Nor is this bill about de-emphasizing device registration or emergency notification. This bill is about making more AEDs available to the public. We believe strongly in the importance of first aid, CPR, and AED training, regular maintenance, and registration of these devices. However, Qualifications in civil immunity laws have been shown to be an impediment to the acquisition of AEDs and tend to increase liability rather than provide immunity from it. Furthermore, recent trends in litigation suggest that a facility without an AED may be subject to more liability than one with an AED. There is some anecdotal evidence that these requirements are preventing Alaskan building owners from providing AEDs in their facilities. In other cases, building owners are limiting the use of their AEDs from the public where they can most effectively be used. As a result, people may be needlessly dying who might otherwise be revived from access to the AED. Please consider.
Excuse me. When you say building owners are limiting the use of the AEDs to the public, so you have information that people have had heart attacks in buildings and the building owner refuses to allow somebody to use the AED? Is that what I'm hearing?
Essentially, yes, that is what you are hearing, Madam Chair. So one example that I can offer is in this building right here. Outside this room, in the hallway, down near the elevators, there's a cabinet with an AED in it. And on the cabinet, there's a label that says use by untrained personnel is prohibited, or something to that effect. What we're afraid of, as you saw in the video, these devices can be used easily by somebody without any prior training. Somebody, a would-be rescuer, might see that label and be deterred from using it, and therefore a patient might go unattended to in a reasonable amount of time. So that's my response to your question, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
The second example, anecdotal example I would offer is at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. We have 80-some buildings on the campus proper and barely a dozen AEDs, and we should have many more. But General Counsel has concluded that there is risk, moderate risk of being sued by the placement of AEDs. And so, therefore, there's this resistance to the AEDs that we're trying to overcome. At UAF in particular, there's a large and transient population of students and faculty, and the fear of counsel is that we can't adequately assure that there is always appropriate people trained to use the device. And secondly, they're fearful that we are unable to comply with the maintenance requirements. And to explain that further, four of the leading manufacturers of AEDs require or recommend daily maintenance checks. And in a large institution, the ability to ensure that those manufacturers' maintenance recommendations are complied with may be nearly impossible. The primary public policy goal of AED Good Samaritan legislation should be to offer liability protection to all the AED program constituents with the objective of putting more AEDs in service. Model AED legislation does not include program design or operational requirements and should not condition immunity upon compliance with any of those requirements. If you consider, for example, OSHA laws that require that certain number of people be CPR trained, they do not attach that requirement to the Good Samaritan law as a condition for immunity. We know of no opposition to this bill. The American Red Cross has no objection. The American Heart Association on the national level has taken a position in support of this legislation, and they are a major provider of AED training, and there is no fiscal note. So I urge your support for passing this bill out of committee, and I stand ready to answer your questions.
Thank you. First, before we go into questions, I'd like to announce that Representative Millett has joined us. Representative Foster and then Representative Lynn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You had mentioned that there was no risk of shock, and in the video it said in the instructions, the automated instructions, please do not touch the person while the shock is being administered. What happens if you do touch somebody while the shock is being administered?
Yes, sir. Through the chair. The conventional thinking and the programming of all the current devices was that there was a risk to the rescuer being shocked from that. However, there's current research, there's research that's currently underway in Washington that wherein researchers were actually performing CPR chest compressions on a patient while a shock was delivered, and in numerous instances no shock was felt by the rescuer. So in time, I expect that the programming will change and the guidance that's provided to during the training will be modified to reflect that.
Thank you.
Representative Lind.
Thank you. What does one of the devices cost typically?
Typically about $1,500, and that includes the cabinet and all the things that go with it.
All right. And if I may follow up, you say you have periodic maintenance. What do you do? What do you maintain? Has it a battery, or what do you maintain when you open it up for inspection?
Yes, sir. Thank you for the question. Through the chair, the maintenance involves the battery and the patches. The batteries. A quick maintenance check is basically to ensure that the device is in place and charged up. Usually, there's an indicator. The batteries do have a shelf life. It's typically about 5 years. And they have to be replaced. The patches can, part of the maintenance check is to ensure that the patches haven't been exposed to air. If they have, they probably need to be replaced because they'll dry out. Beyond that, there is really no maintenance to the devices.
If I may add, so dry, is it kind of a sticky thing attached to the skin?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Millett, and then Representative Clayman.
Thanks. So how often do they have to be replaced, or do they have a shelf life? Are they good for?
The devices themselves?
Correct.
To my knowledge, there's no requirement to replace them ever. If I can add to that, also through the chair, the technology, of course, like anything, improves over time. So they now use what's called biphasic technology, which is a more effective way of delivering the electrical shock. So people, building owners, may choose to replace them to take advantage of the improved technology.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Couple of questions just in terms of putting the AEDs in context. Is there a difference in survival rate with just regular CPR versus CPR combined with AEDs?
Yes, there is, through the chair. It partly is determined by the type of cardiac dysrhythmia that's being experienced. The AED only works on a certain dysrhythmia called ventricular fibrillation. And this is where there is electrical energy in the heart muscle, but because of an infarction, because of some tissue that's not getting circulation or for other reasons, the electrical signal doesn't follow the ordinary normal pathways that causes the muscle to contract in an organized way. So these devices only work on someone in ventricular fibrillation. When you see the machine in operation, when it instructs the user to stand back, analyzing rhythm, that's what it's looking for. It's attempting to sense the presence of VFib. In the absence of that, it'll recommend CPR only.
Okay. Follow up. What is the statistical improvement of survivability of heart events when an AED is in use versus not in use? I understand. With what you've explained about ventricular fibrillation, which is what they're trying to respond to, I don't remember the statistics, but my memory is that there is a significantly increased success rate when you have an AED in the mix than when you don't.
Yes, sir. Through the chair, I'm not able to cite the exact statistic, but I would say the improvement goes well beyond the threshold of statistical significance. It's enormous.
Okay. I have a few other follow-ups. Part of what's being written out in this statute is a whole, I would broadly describe it as a registration requirement, so that if, say, I'm a business owner and I have an AED in my restaurant, then I'm supposed to notify the fire department or the fire chief of my community that I actually have an AED. And that's being written, taken out of the statute under this amendment. I guess two parts. Were businesses telling fire departments, oh, by the way, I've got an AED, and is there some program in place, if we don't have it part of the statutory requirement, that businesses that have AEDs routinely let the fire department know? Because at least what I would conceive of as a setting, since we don't quite have the AED drone flying our communities just yet, that there might be a circumstance, somebody calls 911, the fire department's 10 minutes away, there's four people in the room, and the business next door has an AED, and the 911 operator might very well say, send somebody next door, there's an AED there, bring it over until the fire department gets here. I guess it's a kind of broad question about knowledge on the fire department side of what businesses have AEDs and what businesses don't. And I guess the second part is, if we take that requirement out, is that going to cause businesses to no longer tell departments like yours that they've got an AED?
To the first question, thank you. To the first question, virtually nobody complies with that requirement. We do have a registry, and people who are promoting improvements in cardiac arrest survival rates feel very strongly that the registry is an important component of that improvement effort. For reasons that you referred to, there are applications that communities can promote to their citizens to get on their phone. It's an app that goes on the phone that will enable a citizen to enroll in the system and then be alerted if they know CPR to the location of a patient nearby within a certain predetermined radius, and also the location of the nearest AED, which only works if we know that they're there. Currently, we don't. So we believe that the AED registry is very important, but we think that stipulating this as a condition for immunity for providing the AED is misplaced. We are launching other efforts to try to promote compliance with the registry.
All right. A couple more follow-ups. There's reference in the amendment to changing this statute as to basically Good Samaritan application to the owner of the AED that's invested $1,500 in putting it in their place of business, for example. Can you think of an example that would constitute gross negligence in which a business owner could be exposed to liability, has an AED in their restaurant, the example I've been using, and then somebody tries to sue them for gross negligence? Any sense of what might constitute gross negligence under the amended, or the statute as amended?
Yes, sir. Well, I clearly don't have much or any training in law, so I'm not really qualified, but I can venture a guess. And I can envision very few circumstances where the failure of an AED to operate, or even if an AED does operate, that it would rise to the level of gross negligence.
All right. And I think the last question I had has to do with, it sounded like the biggest maintenance issue is batteries and patches. And I certainly share your observation that checking daily probably doesn't happen anywhere. I guess it happens in the fire departments and on the rigs. I take that back. But beyond people that are routinely providing the services, I would imagine that most of the AEDs sit on the wall for days on end and no one looks at them. But what kind of is there a lot real potential that somebody's had an AED on the wall, say, for 10 years and never used it, that the batteries are going to be dead and somebody would try to use it later? Is that an issue particularly, or what's your perspective on that?
My perspective is that the modern AEDs have, just like a smoke alarm that you would put in your home, when the battery starts getting low, it starts chirping to alert people nearby that it's time to replace the battery.
Okay, so there actually is something built into. That's all I have. Thank you.
Two questions, actually. I want to clarify. It's my understanding that this bill does not eliminate the requirement for reporting to the registry. It just says that not reporting is not something which is going to deprive you of immunity. Am I correct? The reporting provisions are still left in some other place of the statute?
To my knowledge, it doesn't exist anywhere else.
It doesn't exist anywhere else. All right. Secondly, when it comes to the shock that we were talking about a little bit ago, assuming that the research does not indicate that somebody would get no shock, is the shock that somebody might get if they accidentally touch somebody, that I assume would not be lethal shock?
I don't think it would be a lethal shock. It's typically it starts out at 200 joules, which is a small amount of electricity. As you could probably saw in the video, the placement of the electrode pads is such that it directs the energy straight through the heart muscle, and most of the energy is contained between the two electrodes. So short of a would-be rescuer applying the patches to themselves, I don't think that the shock would be lethal. I'm speculating. But the machine is sophisticated enough that it would recognize that if somebody placed the pads on themselves, it would recognize a normal sinus rhythm and would not allow the machine to deliver a shock.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and for that. And that used to be one of the concerns. We made sure that we got the schools with AEDs, 33 of them, volunteer group, made sure we raised the money to do that. And the biggest concern of schools is they thought that students could take it out and use it on each other. So we did a lot of research to find out that they could try, but as long as, you know, it read the heart rhythm on that, it's not going to do anything to them. But at the beginning, that used to be a very big concern on whether that they could be misused. And with technology, that just doesn't happen.
Thank you. Representative Keller.
Yeah, one question I have, and if you already told us and I spaced it, I'm sorry, but other states, would, if we pass this bill, will we be number one as far as removing the potential liability? I mean, are there other states that have gone here ahead of us?
Thank you for the question. Through the chair, I'm aware of, I haven't studied it exhaustively, but I'm aware of at least one other state, California, that introduced nearly identical legislation.
Okay. And the second question I have is, after these defibrillator gets used, what has to be done? I mean, does it have to have the battery replaced? What's the cost? What happens after a use? Does it throw away or?
Well, they're not disposed of, but the batteries can be recharged or they can be replaced. The electrodes have to be restored. But the most important thing that needs to occur is the EMS providers need to be able to upload from the device the data that it recorded on the cardiac rhythm.
My last question, the use of the word gross negligent, often used word that is not defined, right? And does this increase the opportunity for, at some level, that, anyway, just what is the meaning of gross negligence? How's that?
I don't feel qualified to answer that question. However, we did, yes?
For the record, Representative Wilson, we actually asked Law that question because we didn't know it either after you said it. So I'm going to just read it, if that's okay with you, Madam Chair.
Certainly.
I'm sure it will really clarify things. It says, I will now define gross negligence for you. First, you must understand what ordinary negligence means. Negligence is the failure to use reasonable care, which is the amount of care a reasonable, careful person would use in the same situation. Gross negligence is an extreme departure from this standard. Gross negligence means more than ordinary inadvertence or inattention, but less than conscious indifference or consequences. I'm sure that will help.
What was the citation on that again?
Well, 3.14 gross negligence defined, and this came from the Department of Law.
Thank you.
So we'll make sure that everybody has a copy of that.
Thank you.
Received it.
Representative Lynn.
Yes. I'm assuming when you put the pads on, this kind of reads what the problem may be. So if it's a blockage of the heart, rather than AFib, it would not administer the shock, or does it have that kind of sophistication?
Your understanding is correct through the chair.
Very good. And then the second part, are the age limitations? Can this be used on an infant, somebody 6 or 12 years old? And on the other end of the spectrum, safely on an elderly person, somebody over 80, over 90?
The AEDs are designed to be used on adult patients only of any age that's an adult, so there's no upper limit. They're not designed to be used on children. However, there's virtually no occurrence of ventricular fibrillation in child patients.
And so essentially, if you're over 16, 17, 18, you go all the way up reasonably safely.
Yes, sir.
Representative Foster, and then I've got a question.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As a follow-up to Representative Klayman's question regarding gross negligence, I had two concerns, and one of them you addressed. That was, what if 10 years go by and the battery is dead, and then you say, well, the business owner didn't, you know, it's past its 5 years, I think you'd mentioned earlier. And then you said, well, there's some kind of protection built in, and that is that it chirps like a smoke alarm. What about with regard to if it's used once before and then the pads are not replaced and then they dry out? Is there some kind of protection built in there?
through the chair, no, sir, not that I'm aware of.
And then the second question, you had mentioned that it'll only work if a defibrillation is needed, but if CPR is needed, then it won't work. Do you know statistically, if there's a heart event, is it 50-50 that this AED will apply and be helpful in those situations, or is it 10% or 90% of issues that occur?
I do have some documentation in my folder. Without referring to it, I'm going to recall from memory that it's about 35% of the instances are ventricular fibrillation.
Thank you.
To clarify, that is in the case of a witnessed cardiac arrest.
Okay. And Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, and I want to do a few through the Chair, Representative Foster. They're making more AEDs that put in the CPR portion of that where it actually counts for you as well. It'll make that first contact, and if it doesn't see that, to start you on CPR. And for most people, when you take CPR, you don't know how you'll react and whether you'll remember how fast you're supposed to do it, and they count for you and then tell you when to take the breath and then whether or not they need to kick in the part of that. So as you take technology go, it's actually adding to where you still, you know, I still think it's helpful to take the classes because you're hearing from a professional, but also then having that someone talking to you and telling you to do that, I think is very helpful.
So even though it doesn't, the defib side of that, it'll apply to both situations. It'll instruct you how to do CPR, essentially.
Chair Foster, correct.
Okay.
And if it'll be okay, Madam Chair, Representative Lynn, and I don't want to correct the fire chief, but when we put the ones in the schools, we actually bought pads for children, and there was a case where a fifth grader in Texas went down in the hallway, and luckily that school had a defibrillator and saved that child's life. So they are getting to that point. Maybe some of the other ones don't. But it was an additional cost that we had to raise, so we had pads for children because most of them come with ones for adults.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg and then Representative Klayman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chief Schrage, the text of the bill is going to change from citing specific examples where there would remain negligent liability to simply a standard of gross negligence. A court could interpret that change two ways. The first would be simply allowing greater examples of gross negligence, not limiting it to A, B, and C, but anything that, excuse me, could be gross negligence. That's one way. Another way would be to interpret it as a higher standard, so that these things that are currently listed would no longer fall under the definition of gross negligence, but simple negligence. I think it's ambiguously written because it doesn't clarify which way is intended. And I guess I shouldn't limit it to you, but to the representative also. What is your intent?
I think I'll take this one. But record Representative Wilson, Representative Gruber through the chair. Let's just use this building for an instance. You have them out in the hallway right now. And they say by trained personnel only. And I'm just going to give you a little story. Probably shouldn't do this on record, but I'm going to. So last weekend, we were looking at the AEDs, and I thought they were locked up. You could, because you pull on it, and they feel like they were locked. And that was actually an issue that we had with the school district is we would find them in the nurse's office on top of a cabinet with the door locked, so only when she was there. It took a long time to get them by the gymnasium where you would be able to utilize them. So as we were upstairs, and I was explaining to a colleague how they should be accessible, and he pulled hard enough, and it opened. And the siren went off, and you would have assumed, right, that somebody would come running. A fire department might know. No one knows anything except the people on the fifth floor who open up their doors wondering what you're doing. You know, so at the time, you can't close it back up. The siren keeps until you do it. We called 911 as we were supposed to. The security gentleman came, and when he got up to about the fifth floor, did he hear the siren, you know, on it? To me, that was worse than what this bill does, because what it did is give you the impression that somebody was coming. And when the security guard got there, and, you know, we weren't being very serious at that time, but I said, as long as it took you to get here with that little thing on it saying trained personnel only, my colleague would have been dead. I mean, if he had literally gone down and I had pulled the AED to actually utilize it. That's what we're really trying to make here, is to make it to where building owners will want to do that, because was there a trained person on the fifth floor on a Saturday? This was a Saturday morning. I'm going to say no. There was no one that was trained at that time. Just even having that note on there saying trained personnel only made it seem like I would not have had the knowledge to be able to utilize that AED and save the life of my colleague. Instead, you know, we should be able to tell business owners to have that over there, like when we do our ethics training, 30 minutes on it, just showing its AEDs are in the building and how they're utilized. But the way the law is right now, building owners must say, basically, I know that everybody in the building is trained. Well, look at this building, and look how much turnover there is. Could you really say that? I doubt it. Should everybody be trained? Absolutely. Should we make sure that we're looking at it every day to make sure that it's working? Absolutely. But in reality, is that what's happening? In our statute, what we're showing, it doesn't. You know, so that's what this does, is make it so that business, the big businesses who have them on every floor, so we're not talking about just a $1,500 investment. Just look here, when we have five floors, there's one on every floor, because you want to be immediate to be able to do it. And I think as you see them, I think they'll even get better even with the chirping. It wouldn't surprise me, as soon as they're open, you wouldn't even be able to close them back up until you've made the improvements and changed the paths to them. So what this bill and our intent is to make it to where we have more AEDs accessible to those that are maybe trained or just know how to follow direction when it's being spoken. I hope that answers your question.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
I think I'm seeing what you want to do. What I'm trying to do is to make sure that a court or a lawyer, somebody who's never seen this before and opens up the law book, understands what you want to do, that it be really clear. And I'm not sure that this totally clarifies it. I don't have a problem with what you want to do. You want to be sure that the person who has installed the device isn't liable just because they didn't train somebody, because people don't have to be trained anymore. I think that's what you're saying. There may be some other things as well, and I do support the devices and what you're doing. I'm just, since this is the only committee this goes to, I want to be sure that it's so clear that even a judge would understand it, and I'm not sure exactly how to do it. I mean, on the fly, you know, I'd have to think about it.
Well, through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I don't think that's really possible. I mean, I think anybody could always sue and could always go in front of a judge, I think, by putting this and, you know, and all due respect, because I know you're always trying to keep me safe, and I always need somebody to do that for me, you know. But I think what this does with the clarity of it is really not just make it so more businesses have it, but as, you know, was referred over by the chief to Representative Clayman, a lot of those that are in there, we're not even doing them. So why are we even pretending that we are? And so what this does is it makes it, you know, it's my understanding, it does clarify our intent on what we're trying to do, and this is the best way for us to go about it.
If I may.
Go ahead.
As I understand it, what somebody says, that one or more of these manufacturers has recommended that they be tested daily. And if that is a standard that the manufacturer has put on these, then probably nearly everybody who installs them is violating the standard, and that standard might be used by a court as setting the standard of due care. And obviously, it doesn't sound to me like a very realistic standard, but that could be going the other way.
Representative Gruber, through the chair, when I buy a car, it tells me to change my oil so many miles, you know, to keep me at the utmost so that it keeps my car safe. And we all should do that. Do we all do that? Probably not. But that's still a standard that was set by the car manufacturer. And I think the same thing here. In a perfect world, the more you check on any kind of electronic device, the better it's going to be. I think also when a lot of this were done with the manufacturer, they probably didn't update it because they would rather always be on the safer side than to not. So if people can check it daily and walk by and make sure the light's the color it's supposed to be, and hopefully your building has known whether or not it was utilized, as the chief said, when you do utilize it, the paramedics are going to come in. They want to have that information for the records of it. So I think manufacturers are always probably going more to the other extent and would hope that people will do that. But I think, does that happen in the real world? And I think that's what we're looking at. I think for many things, it doesn't happen that way.
And just follow up, please.
Just one more.
It's used in a different way in court. The plaintiff would sue probably the building owner and the manufacturer. And the question becomes, who's liable? And the manufacturer would use that standard to say they're not liable. It's the building owner's responsibility because they're not maintaining it properly. And it's a fight between the two defendants. And that's the way some of these are being used. And it's important to realize that that what this does is it provides more immunity for the person who provides or acquires the defibrillator. And if that's the case, that guy escapes, but the responsibility falls then on the manufacturer. And it'll be used between the two defendants. And I didn't practice PI law very much, personal injury, if at all, but some other people I think around here have, and I won't say who. And I just want to be sure that we know what we're doing. I'm not saying anything against the bill. I want to be sure that we do what you intend to accomplish. And there's also the concept of what's called strict liability against some of these people who manufacture these products. And there, you don't even have to show negligence. You just have to show that there was a causal relationship. And I'll leave it to the other lawyers to take up where I'm going if I'm on the wrong track, and if I'm not, you shut me down.
Well, I don't want to shut anybody down, but as somebody who has practiced PI law, I actually don't have any problems understanding this. Any other questions? Representative Clayman.
Just a couple of follow-ups. Both a question that Representative Lynn had asked and a question that Representative Keller had asked. First, in terms of, for Chief Shragi, in terms of the maintenance, the batteries we've talked about, as a practical matter, if somebody is in defibrillators and AFib, or VFib, not AFib, goes to the hospital, when the ambulance picks them up, the defibrillator will go with the ambulance to the hospital. They don't leave it behind at the store. They take it on the ambulance. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then the maintenance that actually would need to happen right away is that when it comes back, it would need new pads because the pads are a one-use deal. And then the battery presumably would be checked to make sure it was still charged up.
Through the chair, I agree with that assessment. That's probably subject to variations in different EMS systems. There may be EMS systems that choose to service the device right then and there and are able to upload the information. There may be others that choose to bring the device with them.
But the building owner in that setting shouldn't expect to see the AED stay in the building, more likely to go with the ambulance than to stay in the building.
That's a reasonable expectation, I believe.
And then Representative Lynn was asking a question about age. Is the actual age for purposes of CPR actually 12 is considered an adult for CPR purposes?
In affirmative, yes. Or yes. Sorry. through the chair. Yes, the answer is yes. No, I'm sorry. The answer is 8 years old for is considered an adult for purposes of CPR.
I've obviously dated myself.
And to the point about the child AEDs, the incidence of ventricular fibrillation in children is not non-existent, but it's virtually absent.
And then just a follow-up in terms of
through the chair.
Yes. Questions raised by Representative Greenberg, that in terms of the entire statute, subsection A, which is not being amended, basically says that a person, assuming a non-professional, who uses an AED has the Good Samaritan protections under subsection A. That's
our intent.
And then what's being modified is subsection B, which would essentially mean a business owner is subject to a gross negligence standard for how they maintain or don't maintain the AED at their place of business.
For the Chair, Representative Klayman, that's correct.
And then what's not being changed, what's not being changed is subsection C, that would apply a ordinary negligence standard to the manufacturer of an AED.
Through the Chair, Representative Klayman, that's correct also.
So, again, through the Chair, so in terms of Representative Grunberg's questions, there is an intent here to make it so that between the manufacturer and the business owner, the manufacturer is essentially being told, or the business owners would be essentially being told, rely on the manufacturer to build the machines right. As long as you've got one in your shop, we're not going to hold you out to knowing more than the AED manufacturer does. In fact, we'll hold you to a lesser standard. And that's the intent of the legislation.
Sure, that's correct, Representative Klayman. And I also believe that most building owners most likely think that the Good Samaritan law already covers them. And I think many of them that do have them currently would be surprised to find out that this correction is needed.
And then one last. The last, in terms of gross negligence, I would invite a discussion about batteries and when they age and stop working and they start chirping. It sounds like probably this place is for the building owner. The most likely place a building owner might be found to be grossly negligent would be somebody that had repeatedly been told the batteries were dead and they knew it for a couple of years and they never did anything either to take the AED out of public place, or they never replace the batteries, and then there might be a claim for gross negligence. Whether that could succeed is kind of up to the courts, but that's the one scenario I can imagine where it might become an issue.
Well, and through the chair, Representative Klayman, and sometimes it's easy to go down rabbit trails, but you're not required to have an AED, and I was really surprised in high schools that you don't, or, you know, especially as it happened in some basketball games that we heard of college students or high school students being able to do it. And in fact, it's starting to go to the point to where they're having ones that they actually take with them to games that this has become so important. So I have a hard time believing that someone who had a business that went and bought these, because, you know, for a while for the municipalities, there was a lot of homeland security grants, so they didn't even have their own money in it. But for businesses, it's their own money putting in there. So to go to that extent and put them in, and not do any training and not do all the checks, that just makes no sense to me that you would put that kind of investment in without doing it. They do it because they have become so easy to be able to do, and so we're just trying to basically, in my opinion, correct the statute for what we truly believe that most of our constituents already things covered, and it's not.
Thank you. Any Representative Grunberg?
Thank you. I appreciate Representative Klayman clarifying that. I hadn't read the rest of the statute. I want to go to the negligence standard for the manufacturer. Normally, with products, as I recall, and I may very well be incorrect in this, there's a standard of strict liability, particularly if it's a potentially dangerous injury-causing thing, like a defib. There's a what's called a strict liability.
Representative Grunberg, do you have a question for Captain Shiraki or Representative Wilson? Or maybe we could get to this when we have committee discussion?
Yes and no, because let me finish and you'll see how you want to handle this. My question is, does the standard in subsection C dealing with the manufacturer really raise the standard that would normally be required to sue a manufacturer in one of these potentially dangerous instruments? Is the existing statute, does it insulate the manufacturer where other manufacturers of dangerous instruments would not be so insulated? I'm wondering if they can answer or when somebody else can answer.
Well, I can't answer it because I can't follow your question. Do you have an answer to that, Representative Wilson or Captain Sarabi?
Sure, Representative Grunberg, I believe we have some, there might be some help online somewhere. And testimony, maybe we could do that, and it might answer his question.
Sure.
As people have listened to the discussion.
Just so you understand the question, my question is, does the existing standard in subsection C, which imposes a standard of negligence, by statute raise the standard that would otherwise be applied in this state, which would be strict liability? I just want to be sure you understand the question.
Thank you. So, do we have any other questions? All right, then I think we are going to go to public testimony. And we have a number of people off net. We have one person at the Fairbanks LIO, and we have some people in the audience. Why don't we begin by the off net folks, Wendy McNaupin, to begin with.
Hi, thank you. My name is Wendy McNaupin, and I'm with the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association in Fairbanks, and I'm calling in support of HB4. So thank you for this opportunity to testify. Representative Wilson and Chief Shrogery have done a fantastic job of laying out the benefits of this bill. We know that every minute counts when someone has sudden cardiac arrest, and I believe it's important to remove the impediments of provisions of AEDs in public places. I believe it will provide more opportunities for Good Samaritan acts and in turn result in more lives saved. We urge you to support this bill.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Anybody have any questions for Ms. McNaupin?
May I ask who she's with? I didn't hear.
She said she was with the American Heart Association. Thank you. The next person that we have off net is Jamie Morgan. Ms. Morgan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. My name is Jamie Morgan, and I'm also with the American Heart and American Stroke Association. I appreciated the debate today, and as Wendy said, we are very much in support of this bill. We believe increased access to AEDs will result in more lives saved, and thank Representative Wilson for bringing this bill forward.
Any questions? All right. Thank you very much for being with us here today. Next person off net is Kristen Luby in Anchorage. And Kristen, can you identify yourself for the record?
Hi, yes, good afternoon. My name is Kristen Luby, and I am also with the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association in Anchorage. And I really would like to thank you for your time today in listening to this bill being put forward. We are. I am also calling in support. I do believe that this bill will remove the barriers that inhibit current businesses from placing AEDs in their buildings. I was meeting with a doctor yesterday, and he used a great phrase that is, time is muscle. And when it comes to cardiac arrests, every minute counts. Every minute that you're not being treated or you're not getting help, that time is your muscle, your heart muscle dying. So I really believe that the passage of HB 4 will end up resulting in increased access to AEDs and help provide more opportunities for the Good Samaritan Acts and more lives saved. So I truly do hope that you will consider supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Luby? Well, then thank you very much for testifying today. Now, next we'll go to the Fairbanks LIO. We've got with us Sherry Modrow.
Hello. Thank you. My name is Sherry Modrow, and my comments agree with those of Chief Shraggy. And
excuse me, Ms. Modrow, could you identify whoever you're affiliated with?
I'm a retired person.
All right. Thank you.
So I'm representing myself.
Thanks.
I'm a supporter of the American Heart Association, and I would like to see AEDs installed in many places and encouraged for use by public bystanders. And at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, I'm a full-time volunteer. I would like to see AEDs available on campus as well as across our community. I believe that would occur with passage of HB4. And I'd like to thank Representative Wilson for bringing this bill.
Any questions for Ms. Modrow? Well, then thank you for appearing, testifying today. So at this time then, looks like we finished with the people who are out of Juneau. At this time, is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify? Please come to the desk and identify yourself.
Thank you. My name is Ron Templeton. I work for University Fire Department, and I'm also here with the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association. But my support comes from more of a personal nature. In July of 2007, my wife died of heart disease. So, unfortunately, when she passed, she was not somewhere where AEDs would have done any good. She was at home. But as time has gone on, I never realized that heart disease was such a profound killer of women in America. And this bill that's before today is going to remove some of the impediments that corporations and businesses have of putting AEDs out in the community where people are going to be able to utilize these. And maybe even if we can just save one life, that's worth all the effort that we go through here, all this, because it's so important that we put these out there for people to be able to use and not have to worry about, well, if I give them to people to use, am I going to have some kind of liability, or am I going to worry about being sued because I put them out there for the public to use? So I would just encourage you to support this bill.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm sorry for your loss. Thank you very much. So is there anybody else here in the audience who would like to testify? We're still doing public testimony right now.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
For the record, my name is Jill Lewis. I'm Deputy Director for the Alaska Division of Public Health. The Division of Public Health has the Emergency Medical Services Unit within it that certifies emergency medical technicians and has responsibility for promoting and ensuring a competent workforce and infrastructure for emergency services. We have responsibility for the training aspect in terms of approving training and trainers for these AEDs. One thing that we would, mostly I'm here just to answer questions for the committee if you have any. The EMTs would still be required to get training, which may be one thing I would like to clarify for you. That so we would continue to do the part that we play for professionals.
Thank you. Do I have any questions?
Nope.
Any questions? All right. Well, thank you very much for coming today. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? Well, seeing no one, I'm going to then close public testimony and open this up to our committee discussion. Now, Representative Grunberg, did you have a comment to make?
Yeah. And this is to Representative Klayman and also to Representative Millett, who has been needling me across the...
It's my job.
Which you were right, by the way. If the members would look at the statute, which we've given out, the whole statute, subsection C says the immunity provided by B of this section, which we're amending here, does not apply to a manufacturer of an automated external defibrillator, which means that the rest of common law and statutory law in Alaska does apply, and I assume that would probably include gross negligence. I mean, not gross negligence, strict liability. So I think we're already covered under that, and I'm glad that we've, that really answers my question, and I'm satisfied.
Thank you.
And you'll learn sometimes I go down a rabbit hole, and sometimes the rabbit stays above the ground.
Well, I didn't know that.
Max, I've had 2 years to learn that.
Sometimes.
Representative Klayman.
Just briefly, Representative Grunberg, on the question about strict liability or not strict liability, and there's a, at least in my not voluminous experience in personal injury law, but having worked on both sides of the theories on those, what constitutes a dangerous product that might make it subject to strict liability is part of the common law, and whether an AED is or is not a dangerous product that would qualify as strict liability or not strict liability is something that, in my perspective, is best left to the people that are fair and impartial, wear black robes to work, and are paid to sit behind the bench and make those decisions, and I'm very comfortable with those people having to make those decisions and not us in the legislative body.
May I respond? Yes.
Go ahead.
I totally agree. And I didn't mean any comments I have to change the law or enunciate the law on that. That's not before us today.
Representative Millett.
I've always got your back, Max, but I like your new guy.
So do I.
I'll just add to this, that no good deed is going to go unpunished. I mean, someone's going to sue, they're going to sue, and they're going to interpret the law 20 different ways. You're an attorney, Gabrielle's an attorney, Matt's an attorney. You guys all interpret the law different ways. I think the incentive behind this bill, taking the liability away, is to make our communities safer places to live. Being a woman and in a high-risk group for heart attack, I like this legislation. I think it serves purpose very well, and I am going to sign on as a co-sponsor and hope that we pass this bill out as is today from committee with individual recommendations, Madam Chair.
That was actually my intention today, but I'm looking at this right now, and I'm wondering whether or not this should say civil damages resulting from gross negligence or intentional or reckless conduct. Does the bill sponsor have any feelings about that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wilson, for the record, you know, we vetted this through the fire council, fire department council, as well as the American Red Cross and others, and, you know, they seem to be supportive or neutral on the way the language was. I am not an attorney for many reasons, and so I don't think I'm probably the one to be able to do, but I'm very comfortable with the language that we have, that it does do what our intent is. I'm not sure what the language you're talking about, what that would entail and may cause other issues.
Let's take a brief at ease. Testimony. We have Dr. Michael Levy from the Anchorage Fire Department who has just called in. So, Dr. Levy.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you have some testimony with respect to the bill?
Yes.
And could you please identify yourself for the record and with whom you're affiliated?
Again, please.
Please identify yourself just for the record and tell us with whom you are affiliated. For the record.
Michael Levy, MD. I'm the medical director for Anchorage Fire Department, area-wide EMS for Anchorage. I'm the president of the Lauren Marshall Foundation, which is a foundation that helps provide opportunities for citizens to learn CPR and provide better outcomes from cardiac arrest in the state. I'm a member of the board of directors of the National Association of EMS Physicians. I'm the principal investigator for the Heart Rescue Project here in the state of Alaska in affiliation with Pacific Northwest Project for the Heart Rescue Project. And so I have a lot of ongoing experience in cardiac arrest science and resuscitation and the provision of it in our state.
Thank you.
I had called in support of this bill, feeling that if we could lower any barriers to having AEDs in the community, it would be a benefit to the citizens. I believe that AEDs should be as widely distributed as fire extinguishers and ready available to anybody who witnesses a cardiac arrest. There's no question that they're an important and relatively inexpensive life-saving measure that, when applied early, have the best opportunity for success. I think when people feel that they're at risk of any sort of legal ramifications of having the device or having any other encumbrances like that, then that raises risks for the population and doesn't give us our best opportunity to get these things out there. These devices are safe. They can be used by the public, from public access to defibrillation, and anything we can do to lower the barriers to get them in the community I think is very important, and I applaud those who have brought this bill forward.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes.
Go ahead, Representative Boone.
Dr. Levy, is there any evidence, hard evidence, that changing the standard here will in fact cause more people to install these devices?
I'm unaware of any evidence that in the state of Alaska that this would cause a change. However, nationwide, we do hear of people declining to be involved in this and not wanting to add additional units because of perceived threats of litigation. But I've not seen any evidence responding directly to your question in Alaska, per se, as a study.
May I follow up with another question?
Go ahead.
A doctor, have you seen any evidence that there can be anything else that can be done besides changing the tort standard of liability to encourage these people to install devices?
That's a good question, sir. I hadn't thought of it in that sense, but I would think that from a legislative standpoint, they could be, you could look at it the other direction. You could require that places where the public gathers have to have these devices as a public safety measure, that they would be in all health clubs, they'd be in any place where people gather with more than X number of people, and that they'd have to be available as a public access device, that is to say, not locked away somewhere, but in full public view and available to the public.
May I please follow
up? Would that answer your question, sir?
Partly. We're heading down the path, despite your shaking your head over there. The question is, are you aware of whether any other jurisdiction has done anything else to either encourage or require the installation of these devices?
I'm unaware of anyone doing that. But I've not done like a huge search to be an expert to state that, but I've not heard of that just through my experience with my colleagues.
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask, maybe we can recall another witness. I'll ask the same question.
No, we're not going to recall another witness. So do you have any further questions of the doctor?
Not of this, because he said he doesn't know. I'd like to ask anybody else if they do know.
We're not going to recall another witness right now, Representative Grunberg. So hearing no further questions for the doctor, thank you very much for being here to testify, and we are going to close public testimony. Okay. Is there any further committee discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Keller.
I'm ready to make a motion, if you are.
I'd like to debate something.
Are there any objections?
Yes.
Okay. I guess we'll call the state your objection.
I'd just like to put on the record to find out if there's anything else that can be done besides the tort liability change to encourage these life-saving devices to be installed. Maybe there's something we can do very simply to do it. I just ask the right to ask a question and to find that out. I think that's very important. And, you know, we're going to spend more time arguing about it than maybe asking one of the chiefs.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Grunberg. Representative Clayman.
I would just note, Mr. Representative Grunberg, one of the earlier witnesses did say that California has enacted a statute similar to what we have, and that was the only jurisdiction that has actually enacted similar legislation to this.
Well, if I may, may I?
One more response, and then we're going to, you can either continue your objection and we'll vote on the bill, or withdraw your objection and we won't vote on the bill, or we will still vote on the bill.
I understand that testimony. My question wasn't whether any other jurisdiction had done this. My question is whether any other jurisdiction had done anything else.
Thank you. Do you have an objection to the bill, Representative Grunberg?
I don't have an objection to the bill. I have an objection to not allowing the additional question to see if there's something else we could look at.
Thank you. Okay, hearing no objection to the bill,
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4, LS0027, Alpha, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you. Hearing no objections, the bill moves from committee. We're going to have a brief at ease so that everybody can sign the roster. And our next Judiciary Committee meeting will be at 1 p.m. on Friday.
Thank you, Madam Chair.